Straight Jack, episode 22. What we do is we pick three films and we review them. We have got one new release, a pre-2000, as well as a post-2000, and with a theme based around the new release. This edition's new release was a film about space. And who selected it?
I did. James.
Over to you, James.
Thank you.
No worries.
Pleasure to be here. I went for Morten Tildum's Passengers.
Had you heard of him?
Yes.
He was a real person. He did that. He did the
Imitation
Game.
Yeah. Correct. And no, Headhunters. Brilliant film.
One of your
good film.
Loved it. Yeah. That was his debut. Well, probably wasn't his debut.
This was his fifth.
Okay.
But
no, Headhunters. If you haven't seen it, go back and watch it.
Good.
Okay. Nice little fun.
It was one of those films that James saw, really liked it, and then he watched it with me, and the whole time was sat next to me going, "You're liking this, right? It's like watching a really long YouTube video with someone."
I hate that.
So Morten Tildum's Passengers, which tells the story of a space journey gone wrong, surprisingly enough. So a space journey to a new home, Homestead 2, I believe, it was called.
Very original.
Yeah. And tells the story of two passengers who are awakened some 90 years too early when their ship seemingly malfunctions. Or that is what the trailer leads you to believe.
Da, 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 da.
I think we can reveal the true synopsis, really, or the true setup.
I don't think
you'd
be ruining this for anyone.
Because I think there is a bit of witchcraft gone on here with the way that the trailer has been constructed. Because it really does... Well, not only does it mislead you, I'd say, it flat out misleads you, but it does essentially skip forward half an hour, about half an hour of the story, which is essentially Chris Pratt is the only individual who is mistakenly woken up. And he spends the first 20 to 25 minutes, I think, sort of going around the ship, inevitably trying to understand what happened, try and find out what caused it, what went wrong, until Michael Sheen's sort of bionic...
Bartender
is not enough for company anymore, and therefore he has a think about, actually, you know what, I would like more company.
Doesn't pick anyone.
He doesn't pick just your average Joe. Or Joanne. He picks the stunning and seemingly perfect from the logs that he's read about the character Aurora, Jennifer Lawrence's character.
It's a lovely name.
It is a great name.
He picks her, and there is, I suppose, the real crux of the film, which is where I imagine we will spend most of our conversation.
Well, we were speaking to a colleague earlier who was saying that because of the uproar that has come from it, the twist has been ruined for him already. So I think we like a controversial film based on Her Birth of a Nation. I think it's almost common knowledge now that this sort of weird moral dilemma occurs.
Should we just put it out there? Is anyone going to watch this? Let's be realistic. After they've heard this, if they're listening to this and then still decide to watch the film.
Well, but I think that's a good point, because when I think about what I thought the film was going to be, because the trailer also, not only does it presume or make you assume that Jim and Aurora have both woken up at the same time and they're both in this together, but it also gives this, well, certainly this is how I interpret it anyway, it also gives this impression that there's something mysterious that has gone on here, and there's a bigger play that's happening that they are subjected to that doesn't materialise.
But there isn't. And to be honest, I think talking about this film any longer than we have to and actually going into the crux of the moral issue is giving it far too much credit.
But I think the moral issue is the, for me, it didn't...
It's an interesting...
How have I already said for me?
And we are clocked in at 4 minutes.
That'll be a five for me. Yeah.
There's people playing drinking games on this podcast.
Yeah. Well, they would be smashed.
Absolutely smashed. Yeah. Just wait till we're done with Passengers. God, yeah. Oh,
every time Robbie says every time Ian uses a word James and Robbie don't know,
I pronounce someone's name wrong.
Or reference a film that none of us have heard.
Oh, goodness. So,
I think it would
like
make
Silent Running from 1972. It's, you know, this kind of setting, it can be done. you know, we've seen a lot of films. I was just playing up to your stereotype there. You're now looking at me with eye contact that I'm going to go with it. We've seen people in space fairly alone or completely alone before, and they've managed to sustain an hour and a half, 2 hours. Yeah. And here you can tell they go, right, we've got the two, probably two of the biggest paid, certainly, yeah, for the franchise. They've been two of the most off-screen, most charismatic as well. I mean, they are very likable people.
Bankable.
We put £100 million and a moral dilemma, we can't fail. But this is just out of tosh, isn't it?
But I think you've said there as well that these are two of the most charismatic and naturally likable actors that there are around at the moment.
And yet
they managed to drain and suck that out of them.
I'm trying to work that out. And at first, the first 30 minutes, they have that first hour there, so they've had like 30, 45 minutes together. And you think, oh, there's going to be some chemistry. And you think, oh, there's going to be something that's going to keep your intrigue. And you go, you know what? It's unfair just to immediately go, oh, this film isn't for me. I'm used to seeing far more highbrow films than this. And you can tell, but I can hear you see the kind of audience, and you can tell from the trailer and the marketing what this film's about and who it is for. And you get into it and you just realise that there's nothing there.
But I felt bad after an hour of thinking that, or after 40 minutes or so, of completely getting this film wrong and completely falling for. It was the same with, was it The Shallows, which we said, you expect one thing, you get in, you're like, oh, you know what? It's a completely different film to how it was sold, and I'm not sure if it was done deliberately. But you know what? There is something deep here, and there is something really, really good. And then it just goes all Hollywood, doesn't it? And it does gloss over everything, and all of a sudden
it's dead behind the eyes.
Because
visually,
right,
it wasn't too abrasive. It was, I mean, it was very. The ship was obviously very 2001, but then the bar was The Shining. It was complete. It was colour, bartender stood there, eerie. Something not quite right about it. It was ripped immediately straight out of The Shining, and I thought, oh, they've got some stylistic influences. You know, there might be something interesting thematically, and then you have the moral dilemma, and I think, oh, there's an opportunity for an edge here. Something could. They had scope in a setup that, again, I had no idea. I'd read nothing. I'd just seen the trailer, no idea what to expect. But then it just does. It just feeds the product. It does.
And I almost wish that they had done it on an indie budget. I would have loved to see what he could have done.
It was $110 million.
Was it? Yeah. See, that's insane. Wow, you didn't need Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt in those roles. In fact, if anything, although I thought Jennifer Lawrence was good and was very good and handled with what she had very well, I think could have been done with, you know, a lot more edgier.
It was originally Keanu Reeves and Emily Blunt. And apparently that was when it was specced at $30 million. The screenwriting is ultimately bad. Despite a good setup, it ends up being very bad. But the direction is where this goes completely wrong, because you can tell, you can see these two. I think we've had quite a few films where, like X-Men, sorry, was the perfect example of the amazing cast wasted. Here, you cut away the audience who, I mean, I wasn't laughing for a second. You weren't getting me to even crack a smile, but looking over, you could hear like belated laughs, and then the cut, and then people would be like, do we laugh again? Like the editing was off, the timing was off, nothing was synced up. It just felt like a bit put together by a child. I don't know how you felt with the pacing and the timing of everything. It was just like, oh, and now show them swimming, and now show them doing this, and this will build to this. It was just so rudimentary. There was just nothing.
We haven't shown Jennifer Lawrence in a bikini in 10 minutes or so. So quickly, we've got to have her swimming for a bit.
Yeah.
It's fan service of the highest order.
Fan service, great term. Thank you for that one.
But it is such a good idea. And that's what's so frustrating about it. It is such a good idea. I would have happily seen and probably enjoyed a film based purely on the moral dilemma of Chris Pratt's character and him deliberating and you know, really sweating over whether he should make this decision and then living with the consequences. But they really gloss over
just that. To clarify, just to compound, so it's live alone as a man on this ship for the rest of his natural life, or choose to wake up one of another 4,999 passengers. To he could have woken up all of them, none of them, or one of them, and he picks obviously this beautiful and clearly very intelligent. She is this writer, and that was part of it, to give it its due. It's not just, he's just gone, oh, she looks great. He has read up and fallen in love with their personality too. But then, yeah, it just...
What he condemns her to. Yeah. I mean, she, at one point she describes it as murder, you know, and actually you can absolutely understand why she would say that.
Feel like that, yeah.
Given not just the act itself, but then also what it means she's going to be subjected to. And I suppose where the story then goes, and not going into too much detail, but I think she lets him off the hook very, very easily, considering, as we've just described, what it is that he's done to her, essentially. But the moral decision there at the heart of it, I think, is fascinating. And I think for that reason, this film has something to give, because I think it's enough to have an audience, to immerse the audience in that kind of... That decision-making process, I think, was great. The issue is it didn't go anywhere near to the depth, morally, that it should have done. I don't know if you've seen it, but Force Majeure, it's like a, yes, like a French film from last year, maybe the year before that. I can't quite remember,
but quite recent
history. And that, you know, it sets up with that, the opening gambit of the husband leaves the unprotected family when a avalanche is going to hit them. And then he comes back and pretends as if nothing happened, completely pretending that actually when the going got tough and when there was a threat to the family, he just completely bolted and left them to die, essentially.
Then you have an hour and 45 of peeling under the skin of masculinity, what it is to be. And it goes into such detail. And everyone I've spoken to has seen, I think it is on Netflix, everyone I've spoken to has seen that. You go, they've taken a subject, they've taken a little inciting incident and they've just gone with it. And through great performance and great writing, they've got somewhere. And yeah, when you know it can be done, you're crying out.
And the wife in that as well. She doesn't immediately go, she doesn't go livid at this guy, you know, at her husband.
It's too obvious.
At first,
they
were okay about it in a way. I don't think they've quite realised the enormity of what, I suppose, the significance of him running away is. And then slowly it eats away at both of them to the point where he completely denies it. He completely denies that he ran away, even though, you know, it's quite obvious that he did. And she... You know, she's okay at first and comforting, and then slowly eats away at her, and all of a sudden you realise that actually she can't quite believe what he did and just what a terrible act it is, because it's not something he voluntarily did. It was like his natural, you know, fight or flight mechanism.
Instinct.
That natural instinct wasn't to protect his family. And I think for me, the
cartoon version of that.
Where she immediately reacts, and understandably so, terribly to what he's done when she learns of it, but then, you know, getting as the film progresses, she regresses and her anger regresses and she accepts her fate. Now you could argue, what other choice did she have? And I think maybe I leave that there to the audience, because otherwise we're getting into pretty much the final act, which we probably don't want to do.
I remember walking out feeling just is benevolence the word? I just felt nothing. I was just like, I just don't care. It's inoffensive. Indifference. It's Waterworld 2, is how I think of it. Like, it's fine. It's recycled some old ideas. It could have been a good film in different hands and probably with less money. It isn't. It's just bad. And you couldn't recommend this to anyone unless you didn't like them. or you thought they're someone that's just going to watch something and not really engage with it, and they're just going to look at couple of the pretty pictures and go, oh yeah, you know, if they're not really going to watch it. I don't know who this is for. I think it's a crime that they sell it internationally around the world to people as entertainment, and it's just plain bad.
But it's such a waste, isn't it? And I think you've already referenced X-Men. It is such a waste of two of the most charismatic and bankable actors that we have around at the moment. And
but that's the reason, probably, you think deep down it's probably way more cynical than that, and actually it should be more disliked, because it is probably going, oh, wait, we'll pair these two together. Yeah. You're bringing two of these huge names. People will fight. They're probably laughing in the meetings and going, we can have a jolly with this. This will take about a year to make, if not longer, and we'll just churn it out. They'll go and see it. Doesn't matter. We'll get our money and go home. And I would love to know just how much Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence were in on the gambit. Whether they, what they were doing, what they're thinking. One star. Final words.
One. Oh, wow, okay. I think there's enough for me. I think the two leads are good enough that it's more than one star.
I can't believe we're having X-Men from you again.
Has it progressed the genre? No, it hasn't. It's derivative of pretty much every other film that this genre has. But those two are good. Michael Sheen is good as well. You know, I like Michael Sheen. I like these two enough. There's enough in there. The moral dilemma. The moral dilemma itself.
You really can't believe it. Look at his face.
I've never been. Hell or High Water, Midnight Special, one star is nothing on this. Giving this anything more than a one is crazy.
No,
you're insinuating for 30 seconds that someone else would enjoy this film. That's
two
very
rude. Two
stars
isn't enjoying the film, though, so much.
Generous.
Well, I haven't actually given my rating yet, so I thought this was definitely a five-star film. I think it's a two-star film because the moral dilemma at the heart of it, I think, is enough for me to think there is something here that I wouldn't want to see it again, yeah. But there's elements there that I think, you know what, that's intriguing. And I like Jennifer Lawrence, I like Chris Pratt. Their charisma,
you know,
they do try and dilute them as much as possible, but yeah, it's enough there for me to say that there isn't redeeming features to this, which I think you obviously.
I don't know. On hindsight, pensive. There aren't enough pensive swimming montages.
That's a given.
Yeah, it's just superb,
like they were in The Shallows.
Quality. So
yeah, I'm also a two. The face. I had to look him in the eye when I said that, and it wasn't.
It's just going to be me and you for the rest of this podcast.
Yeah. He's storming out. Lost.
Where are you going?
Oh, dude. You know what? At the end of the 2 and a bit hours, I think it is.
Just under two.
It felt like seven.
Actually, yeah. But we haven't talked about that. It did feel quite long.
The last half an hour in particular, which should be the most exciting part of this kind of movie, should be building to a climax. It's just, yeah.
I fell for it, and long. You know what? At least in the final 10 minutes, I was sort of interested in which way it was going, which I can't say for every film.
Okay.
Also, just as a side note, 2017 New Year's resolution, I'm not going to see a film where someone coughs into a white hanky, and then reveals blood.
Blood! That is, I tatted.
I'm not doing it. So if you see any, I'm avoiding it.
That's like, I did do a loud tat.
Mine is when someone hangs up and the other person on the other end of the line is still saying hello for at least 3 to 4 seconds. I hate that.
I'm not prejudiced, so I'll watch all of them and let you know.
Duncan Jones's Moon. It is Duncan Jones, right?
Duncan Jones.
I always get him confused with Gareth Edwards.
Same, because they've both got very Welsh names, and I'm not sure if either of them are Welsh.
Indie Beginnings.
Duncan Jones is David Bowie's
son. So he's not Welsh.
So he's straight up English, I think.
So, okay. Just need to clarify.
Duncan Jones's Moon, I've got here in my notes, a.k.a. the last known whereabouts of Sam Rockwell.
Classic.
So the year is 2035. And the people of Earth have discovered a method to harvest energy from the sun.
Yeah, like a
renewable.
Enough to keep, what is it, 70% of the planet? You can tell I watched it 8 minutes ago. 70% of the planet.
So this method is automated, but involves one man living on the moon in a 3-year stint. And this film covers Sam Bell, who is played by Sam Rockwell's 3-year shift.
That's it. You don't, with something like this, when it is a high concept, lo-fi sci-fi, my favourite term ever. It's all in the idea, and with a lot of these that I don't think this obviously didn't pave the way with regard, there's always been lo-fi science fiction, which we'll get to later. But this is one that I think made it quite I think this only cost something like maybe as much as 10 million. So it's on the upper end of the lo-fi scale, but the success of this and the growing cult of this film, I think, is a big reason why we're getting, why films like Ex Machina, for example, have become so trendy, mm-hmm. and people are looking to delve into these. Those two films actually have weirdly a kind of, it was only rewatching it, Moon again today, realising how much they have in common. But no, so it's all about the concept. So unlike the previous film, I think saying anything more about that would be silly. Are we all in agreement?
I agree.
Just stop me if I then go on to talk about the concept.
Well, no, I was going to say that it's noticeably, you know, cheaper and less glossy than Passengers and Interstellar and that kind of thing. But, you know, not just because of the budget, but the story and the concept, as you're going to go on to say, I think it suits that more, like, raw and sort of dysfunctional feeling that this film has that Passengers and films like that, you can only wish they would have.
Yeah.
But they just can't achieve it.
They're high fidelity, they're all bells and whistles, visuals, amazing sounds. Whereas this, you've got the a machine that's picking the ore. It's doing some into the moon surface to get the energy, and you can see the low grade sort of special effects. It's sort of the material, it's sort of the residue is being shielded off. But for the most part, it looks pretty good. And actually, it's a lot grittier than I remember. Because I remember seeing
really dark,
it at the time, which was 2009 or 2010?
2009.
I think it's aged well, and it does have a grit to it. It is shot well, and Sam Rockwell is not the best actor in the world. He's far from it. But he's pretty good in this, right?
I was going to say, yeah.
He's pretty damn good.
I wasn't sure where you were going with this. I think he's really good in this.
I think he's not done enough quality films.
It's
but
very
in this,
difficult. I mean, he carries it.
We say he carries it. It is just him.
It is just him, other than, you know, Kevin Spacey's Hal.
He does show diversity in this as well. Because it's, you know, it's the classic. It starts off very well. Things go a bit squiffy. And then things get even worse. And then he manages to visually, his appearance changes quite a lot. And he is able to convincingly play a diverse character.
As always, something goes wrong. I think that's the theme, really, with any space film.
It wouldn't
something
be a film if something didn't go wrong, would it?
Yeah, if something goes wrong. But I think there is that. It's probably not quite as easy to say that it's split into two. But the first half, or at least the first...
There are three definite acts. Checking up the time after every significant event. It's definitely...
But in terms of, you know, like what it appears, or what, I suppose, you know, organically watching this film without reading up about it, appears to be just sort of this emotional and psychological journey of sort of his isolation and all the loneliness that he's been experiencing on his his sort of contracted rotation, all the boredom and everything like that. Actually then sort of there is a distinct moment where it sort of turns into something a bit more sinister and becomes a bit more of a thriller. And there's more, you know, beneath the surface, quite literally, but there's more beneath the surface of the story that perhaps I certainly wasn't expecting at all.
Sinister is a great word, because it was only on rewatching I just remembered just how haunting and effective. There's a sparing use of sort of flashback or memory. We're not entirely, you know, it's for you to see, but it's used very sparingly, but it is haunting. And yeah, sinister is definitely the word. And the way in which characters interact in this, it's strange. It's got a good sort of eerie sort of tone to it, definitely. And the fact it is set on the moon.
Yeah,
and space is pretty creepy and lonely and all the rest of it anyway.
Captures
it's
that.
A good place for Captures an existential really crisis, is the moon.
I think I watched this for the first time when it came out, just like you, Ian, and I really enjoyed it. And then on rewatch, once you know it, you're a bit... It is harder to watch.
It wasn't as good, and it was, yeah.
So I am trying to sort of think about how I felt about it the first time round as well.
It definitely sits higher in your mind, and when you are discovering what's going on, but it unfortunately is one of those, once you know all of the big events, it does definitely lose its shine, and it just doesn't lend itself to repeat viewings, I would say.
Which I think is a testament of a good film, even if the big twist, you know, or just like Fight Club, you would still happily rewatch hundreds of times.
Absolutely.
And I think that's probably where this film maybe doesn't sit up with the best.
I would totally agree. I would completely agree. But yeah, I don't think there's... It is one that we're going to have to leave it out to... I mean, a lot of people have heard of this. And it has got, yeah...
It's got a huge cult following.
I only realise in recent years just how popular this is online and how much people reference it and talk about it as being one of the best. The films that have followed, you know, Ex Machina, Another Earth, Coherence. There are so many, like... There is so much many more, like, it's almost like they've not quite got there first, but some of the concepts have been done better since. And I think people did look at it and go, wait, you don't have to spend a lot of money to do it. And it was also, if it was 2009, I think Monsters, your mate Gareth Edwards, was the year before, 2008 possibly. They showed that if you just had a laptop, you could do these effects on not a huge amount, and you could get high concept sort of sci-fi out there. But people should go and watch it and see what they think for the first time, because it's only 90 minutes, it's not too taxing, and unlike Passengers, you will feel at least that the concepts and the ideas that are brought up are explored. And for that reason, I would give it a 4 stars, because although I didn't particularly enjoy rewatching it today as much as I thought I would, because it was strong in my memory, I think that first time I remember it being quite affecting. So I would give it 4.
I think I'd give it 4 again as well, for the same reasons. Really, I think, although I'd flip that slightly, I think when I first watched this, I didn't, which was probably 5 or 6 years ago. I suppose I don't fully appreciate it, and I didn't quite get it. And I think I might have been a bit distracted when I was watching. I might have been watching something else, or I don't know. But I didn't quite get it and understand the significance of some of the sort of the third act. But then rewatching it, I did appreciate it, perhaps how I should have done in the first place. So I would give it 4 stars. And it has a fantastically ironic "I am the one and only Chesney Hawke's alarm" that he has, which is great.
Yeah, I'll stick with the 4s, all round 4s today.
So
I realised I'd spent £2.49 on Brendan Plan 9,
and it's all on YouTube. Just to clarify, listeners, it is available. All 78 minutes of it.
Oh, hold on. Mine was 75, so maybe there is 3 minutes of footage.
Yes. Oh, well, there is an intro and an outro by a man doing the.
I saw that.
The
I'm
Dracula.
Afraid, yeah,
thing.
I saw that. Yeah, yeah.
No, I saw hello. That. Welcome.
Okay, so my selection this week was the wild card, admittedly. A 1959 Ed Wood's Plan 9 from Outer Space. Now, instead of doing a conventional synopsis, I've just written buzzwords. So we've got funeral, zombies, spaceship, Air Force, Army, local law enforcement, law enforcers, couple who live by the cemetery, lasers, grand finale. I mean, it's got everything. But there was literally nothing missing from this
film. There's more detail
than
that, though. There probably was in the script, I think. I mean,
okay.
It was delivered better.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah. It was more coherent.
So there is a funeral, within the first 5-10 minutes, there's a double funeral to an extent, and they are brought back alive by UFOs. They, using ray guns, of course, they then start wandering around the cemetery and start causing a bit of havoc. The army get involved and go, you can't do that, start kicking off, and then the spaceships go away, come back and go, we're going to have a go at you now. And then it's the conflict between the two frightfully similar looking sides. But let's just to clarify, this is 1959. And I think it cost 100,000.
No, don't say that. As if there's something to defend.
We did when we talked about Blood Simple. I ragged on for ages about how they, scrounged together their own money and favors every which way they could. They got the friends involved and blah blah blah. And that is exactly what I believe Ed Wood did here because of his previous.
He put the film together, and as well, it seemed obvious watching it at the time, but he is known for using stock footage from other seemingly like army instructional videos. I can only assume because the grain. I'm going to start by saying
I genuinely didn't know
anything about this film other than it's consistently cropped up on best worst film lists, and it's certainly been talked about and it's been up there, and we've seen Troll 2, we've seen The Room, and they're wonderful for what they are, but I don't think this is even necessarily that, because they were made in the last sort of 20-30 years. This is just a whole nother beast. This is just classic sci-fi zombie horror mixed together, high concept. This is wonderful. This is so much fun.
Did we watch a different film?
Flying saucers that are literally what, paper plates?
A sombrero,
spray painted silver on a shoestring, Dreadful over fantastic shots of, was it Hollywood? There's some palm.
Not even going to pretend to know.
It's so silly, and it's so fun.
There was part of me that sort of not even empathised, but just kind of sympathised, I guess, with the film. I wanted to like it, but I just felt really, really sorry for it, and I felt sorry for Edward. Felt sorry for everything that was involved. I sort of ended up pitying it.
Yeah, oh my god, yeah.
Pitying who? They've made a
myself.
Film. They've made pro- they've made a film. They've made profit. They've discussed a lot of...
Yeah, but what do you...
Trying to think at the time, the themes are actually very interesting. So we've got obviously all the atomic bomb stuff. we got zombies, we got horror, we've got, you know, spaceships. I mean, it's all there.
Yeah.
It's all flipping there. It's because it's before, it predates Night of the Living Dead, which is like 10 years before that. And seeing those slow, and we've had zombies before. Don't get me wrong, there have been zombies. I walk with a zombie, 30s. But this was all there. Like, it's just really good fun. Did you not, looking
no,
at it?
I didn't have any fun.
Right. Passengers is sincere. They're trying to make this film for adult, like they're making it, and they want people, their target audience, to watch it and enjoy it. This, like, I genuinely thought the dialogue was better in this than Passengers.
Are you kidding?
As well.
I've never seen you like this before. I've never felt like this before.
Yeah, they're poor actors. What is that? But it's a film. Verisimilitude, the suspension of disbelief. Pretend that we're there, and they're
keep drinking.
Look, they're just having fun with it, and it's just good fun.
Yeah.
And if I keep saying fun, it means that you'll also think it's fun.
But is it?
I genuinely
is he making it for fun?
Because other than the final big sequence that before the fisticuffs blew out, and then random puffs of smoke came out of tape recorders.
Yeah.
the long discussions from the aliens who are just humans wearing silver outfits.
Oh,
it went on for about, no, but you will not stop us because we have the lasers. How do you think we're going to stop you? Because we know about this.
I was a big fan of the doors opening, which was just the guy going, "Ooh, what was that?"
And let's not forget when the zombie gets turned into a skeleton.
Yeah.
In a second, he quickly cowers down, and then they open the sheet. Done. Take it for what it is. It's okay. Maybe you're not the audience. I, after watching a lot of really silly, trashy horror films that have really tried to be good horror films at the time, this I don't think this is just trying to talk about a few interesting sci-fi themes with no budget, with no actors, and I think they've done a pretty good job of it. And in hindsight, I think it's aged tremendously in the sense of is kitsch the word? It's just so goofy and it's so silly. And it's so fun. Like, oh, the men will go march into the cemetery to do things. We'll leave the woman in the car, by the car, with the hopeless cop. And then, of course, they get abducted by aliens. It's firing the rockets for a good 5 minutes at the spaceships, like a game of asteroids. And then missing and hitting, and then one being on fire. That'll see them. It's just goofy, goofy, silly, silly fun.
But is it supposed to be? Or is it just looking back?
Well, like Room and Troll 2, we think not, but ultimately we'll never know. Intention shouldn't really hold a bearing on how much you enjoy or think a film is, but it's part of that.
Because there is that sort of lecture at the end, isn't it? Sort of Chaplin, Great Dictator-y, where he... And it just felt like, even if we were trying to take this as a silly movie, they are trying to get quite a serious message across.
Yeah.
And Jesus, hasn't he failed horrendously?
No, I thought that's what they were doing here. Like, because I think that's that closing monologue, like the opening of, is it Frankenstein? Or it might be Dracula, where he warned you were going to see a gruesome picture and they set the scene, like your granddad's telling you a story. And you have that here. But then in the closing bit, it's like, at the time, because that was 1959, just before, like when America's really worried about going into war with Russia and the atomic bomb and all.
Cold War.
There's a chance that people not would have been really perturbed by this, but like, I think they're at least having an attempt at making something that's not. There are some really trashy films of a little bit later, as in the same genre, that are just women being hacked to bits in the start of the slasher genre, and it's lazy and it doesn't even dare attempt to comment or try to do anything. I think at least he's had a good stab. I think he's had a good stab at trying to do something semi-serious with nothing. And over time, I think it just looks fun and it should be commended. And if I say fun one more time, I'm going to hurt myself. But I think there are worse ways. Put it on in the background with your friends at a sleepover. Drink your beers and then just look over every now and look at the little images and just laugh and listen to the silly dialogue. I think on that level, it's light years ahead of something like Passengers. It's at least a film that's found an audience.
But why are we operating on that level?
It's got twice as much percent, double the percent of Passengers on Rotten Tomatoes, which is also important. So let's just
yeah, that's because it's got a cult following, isn't it? People going on there and voting at 100%.
The Room, I believe, has something ludicrous like a 20. This is like 60 odd. But okay, you didn't like it. That's fine.
I feel you've been quite quiet here, James.
Yeah, I'm just waiting.
That's fine. Yeah. The defence is in with the prosecution.
No, I respect your points of view, and I can understand. No, I can't understand that. No, but I can understand you wanting to put that point across, but I can't understand the points themselves. I think
£2.49. Is that bearing weight?
Oh, it definitely is. Yeah. there's so much wrong with this film.
Had I paid for this, I would be fuming too.
Yeah,
to be fair,
exactly. Because I think for me, I mean, I've already mentioned that the UFOs, whatever you want to call them, they are somewhere between a sombrero and a dreidel. I mean, I don't know what they're supposed to be.
But that's the kind of thing I guess we can forgive, surely.
Yeah, because that's, I mean, it's low technology and everything. So, okay, let's forgive that. Let's put that to one side for a second, shall we? And then we've got, obviously, these mysterious people who are basically slightly stiffer and more rigid than the humans, and obviously that.
But they have lasers.
Yeah, but that distinguishes them, so that's fine. And they appear to be killing people. They've got this one guy who's sort of walking around very mysteriously, covering his face, covering his mouth, presumably a last ditch attempt to stop the dialogue from coming out of his mouth.
Well, then you can change it at the last minute.
Yeah, which is a bit bizarre. Walking incredibly slowly towards a group of fearsome people who feel like they just can't move out of the way for whatever reason possible.
It's like that moment in Austin Powers when the steamroller is coming towards him and he's going, no! And it's like 5 minutes of it. Just
they
move.
Run
away.
They're firing all the guns and nothing's working.
I mean, the acting, it's like a school play where the kids come on, they say their line, and then they sort of stand around, not quite sure where to exit.
Frozen.
Because, yeah, not everyone's sort of
looking
around.
Looking at their mum and dad. What do I do next?
It's almost like you can see them looking at the director behind the camera. Oh, now. Yeah, and then they sort of walk off stage or they stop talking. And I mean, the narration as well. I mean, the narration and the dialogue as well. I mean, it seems as if they only have just realised what an adjective is, and therefore they are trying to use as many as they possibly can. There's some of the descriptions you just thought, what on earth are you? I just couldn't believe what I was watching, for one, and also listening to. Well, I mean, and this is a bit of a cheap shot, but what were plans 1 to 8 as well? Plan nine was ridiculous. Basically, cause enough chaos to wake the people of Earth up to what they're potentially doing, like self-harming themselves, and you know, and I like the atomic bomb stuff, the humans versus humans, and what you're perhaps going to create. But Plan 9 was ludicrous. I mean, it was ridiculous. It's basically raising people from the dead. That is essentially what they're it was all under the guise of, we're going to have this really cool plan, Plan 9. We're going to call it Plan 9 because, oh my God, it's such a good plan. It's almost like one of those things where, you know, we've got such a bad plan that it might just work.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't understand the logic behind that. And it's basically just bringing people up from the dead and making it look as horrendous as they possibly could. So I don't understand. I mean, it's 75 minutes and, you know, I've had dentist appointments.
And that's the shortened version.
I mean, I've had waits for the doctor's appointments that have been more enjoyable and more fulfilling than perhaps this film has been. I mean, it's atrocious. I'm right. There are no redeeming features to this whatsoever.
Oh,
other than the fact
that
I probably laughed more during this film than I have at some out-and-out comedies.
Yeah.
But laughing at it rather than with it, which is never a good sign.
But that's fine.
But it's so, you know, there's some films that are so bad that it's good. This film is so bad that it's just diabolical. and it's just, I don't know what else to say. It's just really, really bad. It's one of those films. It's almost one of those films. It helps contextualise what a one-star film is. And I genuinely feel bad for Idiocracy.
Yeah, I was going to say,
thank
you.
Because I've tarred them with the same brush.
Yeah, I will take your apology.
Yeah.
And I will echo it to Owen Wilson.
But it's got so much more thought and so much more care and so much more intent has gone into this than Passengers. So much more.
I read somewhere that he only did one take for the majority of those shots.
He haven't got the money. They're shooting on expensive 35mm film, mate.
I haven't cared. Come on.
I don't know the exact number, but it's a lot. He made a lot of films. I mean, he made several a year. directed several a year.
Yeah.
And they were all of the same kind of ilk. This is the gem. This is the jewel.
this is
widely considered.
This is the diamond in the rough. Isn't it? This is, yeah. Okay. All right.
No, I think you've got to take. I know, and I know how pretentious I sound, because it is just saying, okay, it's really dreadful, but I kind of like it, and I can't really explain why. But it is goofy and fun, and it's I think there's a charm that got to me that I think, obviously, you've not found, which is fine. But I would rather watch, on record, I'd rather watch The Plan 9 every so often than The Passengers of the Waterworld. Like, at least they're, or the, well, yeah, or The Idiocracy.
It's because they're half as long.
At least the intent is there. I think there's strong intent, but not too many, too much at his disposal. He didn't have enough money, but
money. I've just given him £2.49 of my money to rent this film.
Go on. We'll let the audience decide. But it is for free on YouTube. To contrary to James, yeah. James insisted.
Salt to the wound, that one. But yeah.
What are you giving it, James?
I've already declared one star. I think I'd already declared one star. But
okay.
Yeah, one star. I can't. I've said time and time again that I've given films a two because there are some redeeming features to it. Like Passengers, for example. This film for me had, other than a tiny bit of social commentary and foreshadowing of human, sort of where humanity was heading, this had absolutely nothing. And it can only be one star, in my opinion. And I can't believe you're the one backing it as well. It just seems, you know, the person who is by far, you know, far more cine literate, no offence, Robbie, but than you and I.
Oh, 100%.
And has seen some of the most remarkable, seen an incredible array of films. And you're backing it, and what are you giving it,
Robbie?
Yeah, at least it had the decency to only be 75 minutes.
Yeah.
It is one star. I got the charm. I did get it, and I got, as I said, but it just ended up in me pitying it. I just felt really sorry for it. It's not a good film, and people who watch it are not for a good time.
It's a three star from me.
Three stars.
There were moments when I was watching.
Can we?
There were moments.
Can we go back to his catalogue of ratings and see what else he has rated three stars? And understand what ball. But you rated Zodiac three stars, Robbie. He's put that in the same camp as Zodiac.
He's just trying to guilt you now. Don't give
him. No,
you stick
to your thing. There were moments when I was watching this film where I was giving it a two star. There were moments where I was genuinely giving it a four star. There are specific moments that Passengers, not a single image or idea or texture or sound design, none of that movie will ever stay in my head. The second I left, it was completely gone from me. There are at least a few images of tinfoil UFOs and men, zombies being turned into skeletons and such jarring, ludicrous dialogue that's the worst attempt of aliens ever that I will remember, and I will smile, and I think it's a good hardy three star film.
Was there anything that gave him away as aliens? The weird
the weird greeting of just crossing their arms. Oh, now I come to think of it.
Anyway,
on to next week.
Next week, please.
We are flying.
Yeah, let's push this.
Straightjack 23
under the carpet.
I believe it was my selection, and I have gone for Martin Scorsese, the man, the myth, the legend, his new film, his passion project, Silence, which has quite an open and quite the obvious theme of religion, which leads on to the post-2000.
Which was chosen by me, James, and slightly different take on religion. I've gone for the classic Bruce Almighty.
And the pre-2000?
Speaking of classic, I have gone for the oldest film that we will review in Straightjacket.
I thought you'd forgotten the name.
Oh, I see. Yeah. It is The Passion of Joan of Arc.
Correct.
Is it the oldest film we've ever reviewed?
This is 1928.
It's a silent film.
Something like that.